Yo, 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 what's good? What's good, everybody? Welcome back. Welcome back to another episode of the Isaiah K Podcast. Bringing it to you this morning. Morning pod. I've been enjoying the morning pods. Let's get into everything. Got a pretty good episode for you guys. Not gonna lie. But I was pretty excited to talk about this episode or to bring this episode to you guys and record. Yeah, I mean, there's no surprises. We will be talking women college basketball, women's basketball. We will be talking about it. Obviously, both of the Elite Eight games with LSU and Iowa and UConn and USC. And we'll be talking about the tournament just in general and, you know, just everything throughout that game. Another historic night for women's basketball. That game, that Iowa and LSU game, drew 12 million viewers. We'll talk about that as well. But shouts out to everyone that is listening. First and foremost, I'm your humble and highly favorite host, Isaiah Kidd of the Isaiah Kidd Podcast. Shouts out to everyone that is listening. Once again, greatly appreciate everything. So as I said, we're gonna be talking about the tournament. We're in the thick of the tournament now, you know, Final Four time for both men's and women's. The men's kind of, I'm not going to say the men's tournament hasn't been good. It has, but UConn is clearly the best team. If you've been watching and following the tournament, they have looked like the best team, and I don't even know who's best, who's like the second best. But there's a clear disparity. There's a clear gap between UConn and whoever you think the second best team may be in the men's tournament. And one could say, well, South Carolina is undefeated in the women's side. Yeah, but we also have some. I mean, you're not going to count on UConn and Paige Beckers or Iowa and Caitlin Clark. Like we got some really good individual talent. They got stars. And so we're going to talk about the nips and tucks of everything. But as I said, historic night. Monday night was a historic night for women's college basketball, for women's basketball in general. As I said, the LSU and Iowa game drew 12 million viewers. And at one point, it peaked at 16 million, right? And, like, that's huge. That's huge. And I'm not going to lie, I kind of downplayed the ratings and how would the ratings look. I thought it would be somewhere between 8 to 10 million, right, for Monday's night game, but it was at 12. And to really show how impressive those ratings are, it was the most watched. I got a list of things that it had more viewers than. It was the most watched women's college basketball game ever. The most watched women's college basketball game ever. It had more viewers than the 2023 NBA Finals. It had more viewers than the 2023 World Series. It had more viewers than the 2023 Orange Bowl. More viewers than the 2023 Big Ten Championship. That also includes the 2023 Cotton Bowl, 2023 Pac-12 Championship, 2023 Big 12 Championship, 2023 ACC Championship, also the 2023 Peach Bowl, Thursday Night Football, every 2023 college football regular season game except Ohio State and Michigan. Insane numbers. That right there is pretty incredible. That game drew that many people to a television set, or to a flat screen. Television set sounds kind of old, but you get the gist. A lot of people ran to the screens to watch that basketball game, and it was a really good watch. It was a good watch in terms of the game. I thought Iowa pretty much controlled most of the game. They came out really hot from three. Caitlin got started, like, started really early. You could tell that first minute it was going to be a long night, right? Caitlin was going to get hers and be able to get hers no matter what. But it just really continued throughout most of the game. I mean, outside of that run that LSU went on to end the first quarter, that was pretty much it. Outside of that run that LSU made in the first quarter, Iowa controlled the pace of the game. I've watched respectfully, Iowa and LSU. I've watched both of these teams a lot this year, this past regular season, and also leading up into this game. So, I watched the Colorado and Iowa game, the Sweet 16 game, and the pace that Iowa wants to play us. They want to get out in transition. They want to get open looks. Caitlin, you know, that opens up everything in terms of her distributing and playmaking. That's what they want to play. That's how they want to play. So when I saw Colorado trying to play at that pace, I was like, that may not work out. That may not end well. And then the pace of this LSU and Iowa game was remotely the same, even a lot quicker. I mean, the final score was 94. What was it? 94-87. Like, Iowa got into the 90s. LSU scored their points as well. So it was a really up tempo. I would say the pace wasn't slow at all. They were getting up and down, up and down. I think the big thing for Iowa was, defensively at least, was the switching. They started out in the zone. You know, LSU kind of had its way. I'm assuming they went with the zone because LSU's the longer, they're the bigger team. So when they started out in the zone, but Iowa switched to a man. The man, due to LSU's ability to be such a good offensive rebounding team, they switched to the man. Man to man was much more effective for Iowa defensively. So I mean, but I think a huge part is trying to defend Caitlin Clark. LSU, I think, had the wrong defensive game plan and defensive mindset in terms of trying to defend Caitlin Clark or stop Caitlin Clark. First, Caitlin Clark is the caliber of player where you don't stop those kind of players, right? You don't stop. You hope to neutralize them and take certain things away. You got to take certain things away. And with Caitlin, she's a scorer. She's going to get her 30 a night, right? She's going to get her 30, 40 points. She's going to get that. She averages 32. So that's a given. I think the double trouble and when teams get in some deep waters is when she gets her 30 to 40 and then topple that with 10, 11, 12, 13 assists. And I think that was the issue. You can have Caitlin Clark being you, right? You can live with her getting her 30 or 40 points because that's what she does to everybody. Like, newsflash, no one has stopped her. No one in the country all year long has been able to figure out the answer to stop her. But in games, when you can look at Iowa's record. I've watched a handful of their games. When Gabby Marshall and Kate Martin, when those particular players, when the others are not clicking and when they're not scoring, Iowa is at their most susceptible. Because that means Caitlin is getting hers, but everybody else, not really in the rhythm, not really confident in the shot, not really confident what they're doing in the offensive rhythm, in the offensive scheme of things, right? So I think and also another thing with great players, there's not one player that you just say you're gonna guard Caitlin Clark all night. No. That type of defensive assignment is a whole collective team effort. That is a team collective effort defensively to try to stop and neutralize her. So basically, to ask Haley Van Lift to guard Caitlin, who has like 3 or 4 inches. Kaylin has about 3 to 4, 5, maybe 5 inches on Haley. To ask her to go out there and guard her for the entire game was completely diabolical. It was completely malpractice. It was never going to work. And it was pretty obvious from the start that Kaylin was going to have her way pretty much with anyone, but especially Haley. I mean, she was beating Haley off the dribble a multitude of times, which led to easy layups or you know, just different mismatches in the half, number mismatches in the half court. And it just didn't fare well. Iowa got easier shots. Iowa got into their offense pretty easily. It was pretty easy. It was pretty easy. And then I know a lot of people was like, well, why don't you put Flage on her? Well, and this is just my humble opinion. My humble opinion is I don't think LSU could afford to put Flage on her, because I think first, Flage, I think she is LSU's most well-rounded offensive player. So for her to waste energy, burn energy on defense and trying to stop and guard Caitlin Clark, I think that would have took away a lot from her offense. And then on top of it, I think by the time Flage was, when Kim Mulkey switched the matchup, Flage was already, she was 3 fouls in. She had 3 fouls. So she was already in some foul trouble. So it was a tall ask for just one player or two players to try to take turns and guard Caitlin Clark. It was never going to work like that. LSU's best chance defensively was, okay, Caitlin gets her 30 to 40, but we will not allow her to get others involved. Because you look at the others, Kate Martin had 21 points. Another girl had 16 points. Another girl had eight points. When Iowa and Caitlin Clark, when they're getting that type of contribution from others, that's what makes them a Final Four caliber team. That's what puts them over the top. And then, I mean, we can get to LSU offensively. I thought Iowa got easier shots. They got easier looks. I've watched LSU a handful of times this year. I've watched them throughout the tournament. They are at their best offensively when they're playing through Flage Johnson. I know, contrary to popular belief, I think she is the most well-rounded, all-around offensive player that they have on their roster. And it kind of shows when she is aggressive and she's able to get others, she's a scorer. She's going to get her shot off. But then also being able to get others involved, it's a totally different LSU team. I felt like, you know, Angel Reese got off to a pretty hot start. She had 12 points in the first quarter, but I felt like they relied too much on her, because Angel is not the type of player where you run your offense through. Cause that, I think constantly too much, LSU was just trying to throw the ball down low to her. And that's not her game. Her game offensively and defensively, really, is predicated off of her energy, effort, and being able to use her size and physical presence to get her way. That's how she eats. That's how she gets her buckets. A lot of her buckets is on second, third, fourth, fifth opportunities, and being able to physically impose her size. I.e., that is why, for instance, when you see LSU play South Carolina, that is why she kind of struggles with Camila Cardoso, because Camila is just as big. She has some issues versus UCLA in the Sweet 16, because the big girl Betts, the center, Betts, she gave her issues down low. So when Angel runs into centers or forwards or bigs that are just as big or if not bigger than her, she struggles. She struggles. She struggles to get her shots off, and especially in one-on-one opportunities and situations. She struggles. I think, so like I said, I thought LSU's best offense is basically playing off of Flaje, those perimeter players. Anisha Monroe is another one. I think she's a lot more skilled, a lot more polished as a skill post player, face-up player than Angel is. So that's just contrary to popular belief. I don't know. I think it should be well known. I think it should be noted, but that's my take. In my humble opinion, I think that is where LSU's at their best offensively when they're playing through Flaje. A lot of people are calling out Kim Mulkey and rightfully so. Kim Mulkey's always had like a she kind of feels like John Calipari, like the women's version. She feels like the women's college basketball version of John Calipari. Really good recruiter, great recruiter, all-time recruiter. At coaching, adjustments, X's and O's wise, leaves a lot to be desired. Same as John Calipari. I think John Calipari is an excellent recruiter. Kim Mulkey, excellent recruiter. But in terms of the X's and O's and being able to game plan, I think there's a lot to be desired. And a lot of people was calling it out, but some of it, yes, I think is valid. I think it's very much valid in terms of her lack of adjustments, especially in the second half, because the first half was pretty close. Going into halftime, it was a 45-45 ball game. In the second half, in that third quarter, Iowa just completely blew the game open. And that, I think a lot of that came from just lack of second half adjustments, lack of adjustments ready to for the second half, right? I'm going to also get to Haley Van Lith in her situation, and this is going to go into the transfer portal. But just watching Caitlin Clark, it kind of brought back watching 2016 Steph Curry. I remember that. I remember 2016 Steph Curry very vividly. And that was obviously his second MVP year where he won unanimous MVP. And every shot that he shot, every three-point shot that he took, you had a feeling that it was going in, right? If it was remotely close, you felt like it was going in. And with Caitlin Clark, watching her versus LSU, and just the long range distance shooting that she was doing, it was very 2016 Steph Curry like, kind of a little bit of like Damian Lillard, where the range is just literally insane to watch. And then you take into account that, okay, we are all in awe of her scoring and shooting ability, but then her vision in playmaking just puts her on a different level offensively, right? And I'm not going to do the whole silly debate thing. Is she the greatest college basketball? I'm not going to do all that. Like, there's been some all-time great college basketball players. And I think a lot of us are living in the moment and we have a little bit of recency bias, right? I think some people forget that Breanna Stewart won 4 straight national titles. Like, I think a lot of people forgetting that Maya Moore lost a total of 4 games in her collegiate career. Like, I think a lot of people are forgetting some all-time great college basketball players. So I'm not gonna go down that route, but she's awesome and she's truly transcendent. She's a transcendent generational talent, and I can say this definitively. She is moving the needle. She's a needle mover, and she's moving the needle for women's college basketball and women's basketball in general. It's just impacting women's college basketball, but it will soon impact the WNBA. It will impact the WNBA. So she's a needle mover, and that's why I think the Steph Curry comparisons are pretty easy to make. They're pretty easy to make because when you see the three-point shooting, you see her ability with the ball handling and being able to shoot off the dribble. It's like, oh, that's kind of like Steph Curry-like. But then you get into, you know, how Steph is marketable and he's relatable and a lot of people gravitate to him. And over the last decade, if you look at the highest rated NBA games, they all have included Steph Curry. And you look at like that, I think there is there's a lot of similarities with Caitlin Clark and Steph, not just what they do on the court, but what they also bring in terms of fans and viewers and viewership. There's a lot of similarities. Now with Haley Van Lith, let's get to that. And with Haley, it's so funny because you can tell women's basketball has finally made it to a point where I can tell it's made it and it's here, because the players are getting flamed. They're getting criticized exactly how the male athletes would, right? Exactly how the male athletes will. Now, I'm going to say this. I've been talking to my buddies a little bit, talking to some friends throughout the season. And I've already pointed out, I haven't talked about it on my podcast very much, but I've already pointed out that I thought Haley Van Lith, I didn't think she was a good fit at LSU. I really didn't. I didn't think she was a good fit at LSU, mainly because I thought she was playing out of position. I thought for the entire year, she was playing out of position, and I could tell that very early on. It was very noticeable early in the season. They had her playing point guard. She's truly not a point guard. She's a two. And I think, like I said, I think she was playing out of position. And it's not that she's not a good player. I think she's still a good player. But it kind of goes to show you the importance of, you know, situations, right? And the kind of the danger of the transfer portal. I think the transfer portal is dangerous. I think there's some upside to it, but also this is kind of like the downside. Because let's be honest, let's call a spade a spade. Haley, LSU, the NIL money. The NIL money was talking. LSU just came off national championship. And, you know, why not? Why not join? And when she joined LSU, everybody's like, man, this is going to be great. And we always do it in sports. We attribute when certain teams add high-end or just quality players in general, we always think more means more, like more is more, right? And sometimes more is actually less, right? More is actually less and less is actually more. You know, we always do it in sports. We always do it in sports. But to make matters worse, she was playing out of position and playing a position that she had no business playing. But to make matters worse, she was trying to learn how to play point on one of the most popular and watched and discussed teams in college basketball, in basketball in general, but in college basketball. So that only added to the pressure. That only added to the pressure, and she never figured out where she stood, what her actual role was as a scorer, because you gotta, like, Haley, she's played on basketball teams all her life throughout different levels, high school, college, at Louisville, where she was one of the premier go-to options. And the rhythm was off. The confidence was off. The confidence was shaky. It was up and down, inconsistent all year long. And on the defensive side of the ball, she couldn't keep up with not just only Caitlin Clark, but that's kind of been an issue of hers all year. So, To attribute all of this, that's why a lot of people are pointing the finger at Kim Mulkey, because there seems to be no set predicated offense that's predicated on something, or that's you know, who are they playing off of? Who's the go-to option? who's the go-to option? Because I think too many times I watched LSU and I'm like, it seems like there's a different person every night. But every time that I would see Flage be aggressive and they were playing through her, they would win. They would win and they would look good. They would look at their best offensively. So I just didn't think Haley Van Lith fit what they were trying to do. I didn't think her skill set fit what they were trying to mold the position and for her to be in. I just didn't think if it was a good fit at all. And that's kind of the blessing and the curse of the transfer portal. So I got into a little exchange on Twitter because I was talking about the transfer portal, whatever. But that's the nature of the beast of the transfer portal. Everybody just assumes that, you know, when you transfer and go on to the next place and go on to the next spot, everybody thinks the grass is greener on the other side until you get on the other side and like, huh, okay, right? So, like, I value the transfer portal. I look at it. I think it's an element of college sports, and I'm not mad. I think there should be some stipulations and some boundaries set on when kids can transfer. It shouldn't be happening in the middle of the tournament. I'll say that. That's just another piece. But ultimately, this is the blessing and the curse of the transfer portal. Okay, want to transfer? You want to leave? Cool. You don't? Okay, cool. Okay. Bigger opportunities, NIL opportunities. Okay, cool. But with Haley, she may have had bigger and better NIL opportunities at LSU, and I'm sure she got to the bag, but her play, she severely digressed. She severely regressed. Not to say that she's not a good player, but she regressed. She never seemed to find a rhythm. And that pulled on her confidence. And then, you know, you make a couple bad decisions, some turnovers, she gets benched, get in foul trouble, you get benched, and the confidence continues to just go down. Now, I will say this, just in the totality of things in terms of women's college basketball, the reason, and I know a lot of people like, well, what's going, like, why is it so popular? Well, it helps when you got talents like Caitlin Clark and Juju Watkins. Juju is awesome. She can really, really play. I mean, you want to talk about playing at your own pace, and there's just a rhythm that I think Juju has that a lot of basketball people really like. I've been talking to some basketball people. They really, really like just the movements, the pace, just the rhythm that she plays at. Paige Bueckers is just efficient. So it helps when you have stars. When you have stars, it doesn't matter if you're a dude, if you're a girl, people are going to watch. Like, people are going to watch. You're going to gravitate eyeballs when you have superstar talents. Also, I think a huge factor with women's college basketball and why it's became so popular. Women's college basketball is delivering and producing what men's college basketball is not. Continuity matters. Continuity matters. This is how you build fan bases, right? Like, Caitlin Clark has a fan base. Angel Reese has a fan base. Paige Bueckers has a fan base, right? They have been able to build, they have cultivated and built these fans through years of following, right? We have been able to see Paige as a freshman have a sensational freshman year, battle with some knee injuries, come back, lead UConn to the Final Four, while, like, UConn, they're battling a bunch of injuries this year, still got to the Final Four, right? We've been able to follow Cameron Brink. We've been able to follow Caitlin Clark. You know, Angel Reese has a huge social media presence and following. That matters. Like, sorry, that matters. And then not just only the fan bases, but then the rivalries. When we, like, when I was filling out the women's bracket and I saw that there was an opportunity that Iowa and LSU could meet in the Elite Eight, I was like, oh shit. Like, this is what we need. This is what people want. People are creatures of habit. People are creatures of habit, right? And I think a lot of people just want continuity. And that is what women's college basketball is bringing. It's continuity. With the men's, some of the men, like, you know, on the men's side, you look at the 3, 4, 5 most popular college basketball players. And you look at their popularity, look at how good they are. They're mostly women, right? Like, they're mostly women. They're mostly women. I know, I like Rob Dillingham a lot. He's a Kentucky guard. I like him a lot. He's leaving Kentucky. He's not staying there for 3 to 4 years. He's not staying there for 3 to 4 years. I know the one, there's a couple of men's college basketball players that a lot of people know, like Zach Edey. I think a lot of people know Zach Edey, but that's because he's been at Purdue for 3, 4 years, right? He's been at Purdue for 3, 4 years, and he's been dominant. But the best college men's players just don't stay. And, you know, half of them don't even go to college. They don't even go to college. So it's hard to build a fan base, and it's hard to get eyes to TV screens when there's just no continuity and there's just no anticipated matchup or rivalry that you wanted to see. Everybody wanted to see Iowa and LSU due to what happened last year in the national championship. Just all of the storylines and headlines heading into this game. On top of, you know, Haley and just like everything. Kim Mulkey is polarizing. Everything. Women's college basketball is delivering and producing on these things, and the men just aren't. Men's college basketball is just, they're just not producing at the same rate.